Anthony Webster was a Christian missionary before coming out in 2010. He struggled with being gay and is now very open and got engaged to his boyfriend in Paris 4 months ago. He hopes to have a full marriage, but is going to have to move to Scotland to do it. He's with us now. Morning to you, Anthony.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Just before we hear from you, your mum, Anne, spoke to Seamus McKee on last night's Evening Extra.
It was hard for him to come out. Especially to me and his father, I suppose, but he did, and I'm glad, I'm very proud of him, very, very proud of him, and it took his courage to come out. I asked him quite a lot of questions. Tony's a very honest person, he's very forthright in all his answers. He, you know, just said, "Mummy, this is how it is, and this is how I feel," and, you know, he asked me how I felt. He answered an awful lot of my questions, and then through the years, the last couple of years of listening to other people, looking at it from a mother's perspective of a son who is gay, I can now see really, I can see why people are against it, but at the same time, I do think they need to sit and talk. They need to be quite honest and open. You know.
And what's your view of same-sex marriage, now that he's getting engaged?
Well, he got engaged. He was in America and him and his partner got engaged. And I will be honest with you, I do not see why he can't, not just Tony, but any same-sex marriages, I do not see why he isn't allowed or can't get married and have the same rights as me and his father had. We had that choice, as me and his father had, because he loves his partner and his partner loves him the way that I love my husband and he loves me back. Why should the difference be made?
Well, that's your mum, Anthony. How do you feel about this?
Well, I think that, you know, it's really actually encouraging and exciting to see the fact that, you know, my mum, you know, who was born in the 50s, is from Greater Belfast, you know, can go on radio in support of her son and to kind of lobby for equal marriage, just shows, I think, tremendously the tide of change that is coming to Northern Ireland. You know, I think...
Well, a total of 51 MLAs, Anthony, voted against this Sinn Féin motion. So the Democrat majority doesn't want to give you the right to get married. They don't want people like you to redefine the definition of marriage. It's between a man and a woman, they would think.
I know, Stephen, and I think one of the things that the DUP specifically don't really look at is the fact that redefining marriage in no way weakens its, you know, constitution. And in fact, it actually reinforces it and strengthens it, that there's people like me, there's people, you know, within the gay community, the same-sex, you know, community, the people that want to get married are saying, we want to be included in this, we want to uphold the same kind of values and traditions as people who can't get married. You know, we're not looking, you know, to weaken it, to change it, and to make it a free-for-all.
Well, you're looking to redefine it, Anthony.
Not at all. I mean, technically, in terms of redefining it, you know, so that it's not just between a man and a woman. Yes, of course, because, you know, I want to marry a man, you know, but that's the only terms of redefinition. I don't in any way want to go into marriage with the idea of the morals or the social, you know, aspects of it being changed. I want to be able to just legally love, you know, my partner the way that I do, and for us to have the same rights with each other.
You can, of course, legally love your partner in a civil partnership in Northern Ireland.
Of course, Stephen, but that's like inviting two people to dinner and making them eat from a different menu. You know, there's a completely different aspect to civil partnerships, and Martin and I have actually looked into that as well, and, you know, it doesn't offer us the same kind of security that we want. It's not about, in some ways, it's not just about, you know, the ceremony, and it's not about the legality, and it's not about I want what they have. It's about looking at the tide of change in the rest of the world and saying, you know, we are on this journey, especially in Northern Ireland, and
Sorry, go ahead. Well, you should also be fair to the DUP, Anthony, shouldn't you? Because you mentioned them. Yes, they voted against it. The majority of Ulster Unionists voted against it. The Catholic Church is against it. So it's not just the DUP. against gay marriage in Northern Ireland. And as you've heard me talk to Alliance and SDLP this morning, Alliance, despite their party policy, they had MLAs voting against it. Some of the SDLP MLAs didn't vote at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just the DUP stopping this.
No, definitely. And I think there is a bit of a miscommunication, especially in the community, or what's even portrayed, you know, on example social media like Facebook, where the DUP get a lot of fingers pointed at them and the blame, but it's not just them. You know, there are these, like you said, there are other parties involved. When it comes to the Alliance Party and the other parties that, you know, do have policies that are pro same sex or equal marriage, it's encouraging to see that, yes, you know, there are people that want to leave this country that are changing their views, but it's also discouraging that some people can take a seat out or some people cannot vote, because when it comes to issues of equality, you can't take a wee day off and say that, you know, you don't want to be involved in a vote. It's important. I understand if people are going through personal tragedy, there are, you know, exceptions, but...
Well, that's why I was pushing Fergal McKinney. How many people, of course we understand if they were going through a personal tragedy, but how many from the SDLP, how many of the six, this is a fair question, simply didn't turn up the vote because they didn't want the vote?
Yep.
And how, like, many abstained?
An abstaining vote is a vote for no, against. I mean, I hate that, you know, to be as black and white as that, but that is what it comes down to. And I also think in terms of who wants to leave this country, that there are a lot of, especially young gay people like myself, who aren't voting, and that is also a huge part. People aren't being educated on who to vote for and, you know, what they should be doing, and they just are pointing fingers and saying he's saying no.
And can you not accept, Anthony, that the majority of politicians here, if politicians represent the people, the majority of politicians here do not want gay marriage?
I do completely accept that, but when it comes down to an issue like this that is about civil and equal rights, you know, there needs to be some sort of fight against it. And I do respect that a lot of these politicians are, you know, kind of deeply rooted in their religious convictions, and I just think a lot of these things aren't going to change by talk, but they're only going to change by action. And that's why, like I said, you know, it's great to have people that are kind of lobbying for us, but I also do want to kind of stand up on, as someone in the gay community, and say, you know, I respect the government here, I respect that they are doing their best to lead the country in how they see fit, but they are not necessarily reflecting the change that is global at the minute. And to have a kind of local jurisdiction law that is different from the, you know, mainland, you know, Northern Ireland is saying, you know, that they want to be part of the UK, but they do only want to pick and choose what parts they want to be okay with. You know, I just think that...
Well, you have a glaring irony, don't you?
Yeah.
That here you have Sinn Féin, who does not, of course, want to be part of the UK, wanting to make Northern Ireland consistent with a policy throughout the rest of the UK. And here you have the Democratic Unionist Party and the Ulster Unionist Party and others who want Northern Ireland to be part of the UK, wanting to distinguish us from the rest of the UK. I guess you could say that's devolution, but there is an irony in there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things I love about having read some of the Sinn Féin policies and seeing some of the live debate yesterday is that Sinn Féin definitely are, you know, trying to represent kind of change, or, you know, a kind of younger, you know, I think sometimes it's very easy to forget that, like, it's not just, you know, our mums and dads, the people that are my age that vote. You know, we are all entitled to a vote. And like I said earlier, we just need to be more educated and people need to go and vote, because we're voting these people into power and then complaining that they aren't doing for us, you know, what we want them to do.
Can I ask you this? Can I get personal, if you don't mind? Because here we have at the top of this programme been talking about politics and the breakdown of what way different MLAs voted. For you as an individual, as a human being living in this country, how does it impact on your sense of self-esteem that you've got to leave your own country to enshrine your love for another human being in terms of marriage? You've got to leave the country you were born in. How does it affect your sense of self-esteem that you're still not able to donate blood in this country? That you would have to go. You would have to go to England if you needed to do that.
It's incredibly sad because, one, like, I'm very, very into kind of my cultural heritage. You know, I always, when I go away or travel, I'm always flying the flag for Northern Ireland. You know, I'm a fashion photographer, and where I go, I kind of promote what we're doing here in Northern Ireland, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm very pro Northern Ireland and pro about what's happening here. So it's really sad, and it's a real shame that
I should really clarify the blood ban, couldn't I? Because that was too much of a sweeping statement. Of course, there's a lifetime ban here in Northern Ireland. If you're sexually active in England, you cannot give blood. But it's a year in England. That's a lifetime ban here.
Mm-hmm. But that is, in some ways, that is ridiculous, because, you know.
But how does all of that collective of stuff actually affect you as an individual?
As an individual, it actually is quite hurtful, because I was a Christian missionary, and I was away for 7 years doing humanitarian aid work all over the world. So I see the importance of little things like being able to give blood, or, you know, all those different types of things. You know, I also was sick for a very long time. I had cancer, and there, you know, all these things, even silly things medically, you know, I've wanted to go give blood, because that is in some way a little way that people can contribute to help people in this country. I always think about, I've got two nephews and a niece. If one of them was sick and needed a blood transplant, and I was the only one who was, you know, a viable donor, I wouldn't be able to donate blood to them, you know. So it's kind of an archaic law that it's just ridiculous at this point, you know, because...
But what does it do to your sense of self-esteem?
Well,
your sense of self.
Honestly, it completely lowers it, because it devalues who I am as a person and how I want to be able to help someone else. It basically it points a finger at me and tells me that I am not worth being able to do any of these things because I happen to love a man.
The number this morning, 08459-555-678. Anthony, I'd love you to stay on the line with us this morning, and when we get calls from people who object to you and other gay people getting married, I'd love you to engage with them.
Okay.
John and Derry, are you one of those people?
John, is it John here, Stephen?
Yes, John, go ahead.
Are you with me?
Yes, go ahead, John.
Listen, I want to preface what I'm going to say by saying that, and I don't want to sound patronising, you know, but there's a lot of young people out there who are gay. There's older gay people too, but there's a lot of wonderful young gay people, and they're essential. They stay in this Northern Ireland, and they have to stay here and abide by the law. If the law changes in the future, fair enough. But they need to learn to abide by the law.
John, thank you. Now, Robert in Belfast.
I'm guided by my conscience in saying that I stand shoulder to shoulder with the DUP. I never even thought of voting for any unionist party, but I'm standing now shoulder to shoulder with them. I believe that the Christian ethos that they're presenting is correct for me.
Okay, John, thank you. Robert in Belfast. Morning, Robert.
Good morning. My point, and I have to say this with respect, and that sounds like a charming young man, he's speaking there, you know. My objection.
Could you say good morning to him and speak to him? Because it's about people like Anthony. So speak to Anthony this morning.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Good morning. Good, thank you.
I make this point. I make it with the utmost respect. I mean, I feel for people in your situation, but I'm a married man myself, and I look upon it like this. It's merely a biological function in my eyes that makes me say, well, it shouldn't happen. Because, and if I use a simple analogy to express it, you know, one and one in say, like a lesbian community are two, but they can't make three. One and one are two in the homosexual community, but they can't make three. But in the heterosexual community, one and one make two, but they can make eight. So the whole act of it, and if you look at it in another aspect, this unity between man and woman.
What's your point, Robert?
It's a biological function, and man. I mean, a man and a man and a woman and a woman cannot produce a child.
Marriage isn't just a biological function.
It seals the function. How is it not a biological function?
It's not just a biological function. Marriage is about love and dedication.
Of course it is, and the fruit of...
And commitment,
is it not? Don't you understand what the fruit of love is? It's children. That's the whole aspect of it. It's to set it aside as a particular relationship. It's got nothing... I mean, for...
Yeah, but if I was to say to you, Robert, that a lot of married couples who cannot have children were less married than those people who can have children, you would object to that, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't object to it. I mean, they entered into marriage either to have children when they were young, or have it at some stage, or finding out that they, they can't have them, but may get married on the basis that hopefully at some stage of their life, God will bless them with children.
So married couples who choose not to have children, they're less married, are they?
I didn't say they were less married. Well, I mean, they choose not
the
to have children.
Of what you're saying is they would be.
Explain that again, please.
Well, you're basically saying to have children is the
be-all
and...
It's an arrangement whereby the biological function seals it. It's sealed. A true marriage is one where children are born from it.
Anthony?
Well, I would love to see the statistics on the people, especially in Northern Ireland, that aren't married and have children. But, I mean, marriage isn't a function that was created so that kids could be created. You know,
kids can be created outside
of that, you know. In some ways, I completely understand and I agree with you that there's definitely a function within marriage that allows for procreation, but there's also a whole loving and emotional side of a marriage, like a bond and something that, you know, like it even says in the Bible, that no man can tear apart, you know, that is not just for the sake of children being reproduced.
I would have to disagree. And I use another analogy, you know, I mean, there are black people who like to be white and white people who like to be black or tanned. And they buy creams and they do all kinds of things, but they can't achieve that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very foolish to say that a man that loves another man cannot, you know the same love as a man who loves another
man. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this particular function of marriage is set aside for procreation, as we'll use your term, a biblical term. I wasn't going to talk about the biblical aspect of it at all. Talking about the mere humanity of it in terms of human beings, like animals in the animal kingdom come together. You know, we are the only creature who can breed any time we like. Most animals come into season, etc., etc. You know, but they don't have that kind of function. They do the normal function that we as sort of heterosexuals would do.
Isn't it interesting that you're just talking about the sexual function of a human being and not love and commitment and
dedication.
Come on, and
dedication. Don't be twisting my words.
That is within marriage. Well, it is. I'm not twisting your words, Robert. It is what you've been talking about. You've been talking about procreation, about, to use your words, the biological function. Is there not a lot to marriage that is about love?
Stephen, this
absolutely,
is, this is,
completely. I'm just trying to speak of that particular aspect, which, in fact, in my mind, is the thing that seals this thing that we call marriage.
Here's Elizabeth in Belfast. Morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning to you, Stephen.
Say good morning to Anthony.
Yes,
Anthony,
like
just to clarify. Sorry, Elizabeth.
Sorry to interrupt,
Elizabeth. Just to clarify, Anthony, are you leaving the country because of this?
No, I'm not leaving the country specifically because of it, but obviously, you know, we are planning on getting married and we are going to do that in Scotland. And it is a shame. Like, we're not going to come back here to have our marriage viewed as less. Because we want to live in Northern Ireland, you know, we...
Because, of course, if you get married elsewhere and then travel back to Northern Ireland, your marriage will not be recognised.
That's it, you know, and that's an important thing for us. That's why we're getting married.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Good morning to you, Stephen.
Good morning. Say good morning, Anthony. Go ahead.
Anthony, you spoke about all the laws in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what country you go to, I would like to ask you a question. Where does the law of God fit into all this? And that's all I want to say to you.
Well, let him. Well, hold on. Don't just put a question to him and then disappear, Elizabeth. Stay there and let him.
Stephen, I can barely hear you.
Well, let's let Anthony reply to you.
I can't hear you, Stephen.
You can't hear me at all.
You're very way in the distance.
Well, try to hear. Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, Stephen, I have no problem when it comes to talking about the whole God side of things because, you know, and I don't mean to sound patronising to anyone with a religious view from Northern Ireland, but, you know, I wasn't just a Sunday Christian. I didn't grow up and go to church on a Sunday. I went away for 7 years and actively put my hand in the dirt and worked and did what was God's work, you know, and at the end of the day, I felt like religiously for me, the Bible made a very specific point about me trying to define my own relationship with God. And after 7 years of putting my spirituality before my sexuality, I came to the conclusion that God made me this way and that there was nothing more than God wanted for me than to have peace.
Anthony, excuse me, God did not make you that way. God does not create anything imperfect. That didn't happen from God. It happened perhaps at birth or during your pregnancy, your mother's pregnancy. God did not create you the way you want to be. And Stephen, I'm sorry, that's all I've got to say about it. And I'm not just a religious woman from Northern Ireland.
So you speak for God now, Elizabeth, do you?
No. I am telling you what is God's law. I don't speak for God. God bless us, I couldn't speak for God.
Okay.
I have to look within myself before I you know. But he described me as a religious woman from Northern Ireland. There's religious people all over the world who disagree with where he is. And no matter how many countries he goes to be allowed to marry another man, he's still going against the law of God. And this is what I can't understand, if he had a spiritual relationship with God. I really, really don't understand that.
Is it for you to question his relationship with God?
It's not for me to question anybody or to judge anybody. I'm just asking him the question, and I want him to think about it.
Anthony?
Well, that's definitely not the first time the question has been put to me, and I will always say this. I generally don't mind getting into, you know, conversations like this that do come around a religious element, but like I said, for me, it's not my place to turn around and tell people how I have peace with what the way I live my life or what I do. And a lot of people might make presumptions about me because I say that I'm a gay man, that, you know, I partake in what, you know, a religious community would view as being, you know, a sodomite lifestyle. You know, that's not the way I live. But I just ask these people who, you know, are very, very quick to judge, you know, to maybe weigh up in the Bible the amount of verses that says about judging people compared to the amount that says about homosexuality.
Anthony, I am not judging you. I am not judging you. I am asking you. I am asking you.
It's very easy to say. It's very easy to come out with statements against people and then cover it with, I'm not judging you, I just want you to think. And I agree with you. You know what? Thank you very much for your input, and I will definitely think about it, because I'm not the type of person that would turn my back, you know, on anyone.
Well, I thank God for that. But I'm not judging you, because I couldn't judge anybody.
You described them as imperfect.
Yeah, I'm imperfect. I'm not perfect, Stephen. None of us are perfect.
Okay, Elizabeth.
But I try my best to keep the laws of God.
Elizabeth,
Anthony.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you.